to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today and sitting in for our regular host, Juanita Watson. Well, today I am so delighted to be speaking on the phone with Ross Cavan. He is the author with Follow the Money, a collection of interconnected short stories. So stay tuned because today we're going to get into some fun conversations with Ross about some of the characters of his book as well as some underlying issues these characters have. But first, just a little about Ross. Ross is 37, twice divorced, and lives with his cat in Sunny South. Writing comes naturally because his cat is whiny and can't hold decent conversation. Any of us that are cat lovers can really relate to this. His current goal in life is to become a household name like Oreos, Liquid Drano, and Tampax. He strives to be a famous writer as Stephen Kinsley, his neighbor down the street that edits obituaries, column on the Sunday's paper. And Tim likes to go on long walks in the woods, preferably with a mosquito repellent and a crooked walking cane made from a broken branch. Tim adores oatmeal cream pies, is fascinated by cleavage, and is easily amused by kittens playing and traffic snarls. And more importantly, he is currently single, without an agent, a publisher, or a significant other. I don't know about the single bit. Actually, I think he's married. So, taking into this account, you can just imagine how this interview is going to go. Hi, Ross.
Hi, Irene. How are you doing?
Great. I'm so glad to be talking to you. This sounds like a really funny book. Our reviewer, Paige, in her last sentence, she says, I highly recommend this novel to people who enjoy a good laugh-out-loud laugh adventure and who are not offended easily. Whoa. Okay, so let's get right into this. It's a book with, I understand, 10 interconnected stories.
Uh-huh.
And so let's just give me a little introduction as to how these stories, follow the money, what happens. I understand that you have two bumbling brothers, and then everything just sort of unfolds. So just give us a little on this, a little backstory possibly.
Okay. Paige was very correct. If you offend easily, this would not be the book for you. Most humor is pretty much derived from offending someone. So this book will definitely offend. But the premise of the book is you've got this money that changes hands through each story. The first story begins with two bumbling brothers, like you said, and they attempt a kidnapping, and it does not go according to plan, as you would expect. The next story picks up with whatever happened to the money, and you've got a con man trying to work a con, and he hooks up with another, I guess, con woman, and they work a con together, and some things happen that you may or may not expect. The first story, I've been told, is kind of predictable, and in a way, it sort of is because it's a setup. And the second story, something you're expecting a certain thing to happen, and nothing like that happens. So then by the time you get to the third story, you've got things going on, and you have no idea what's going to happen. So to me, that's one of the charms of the book, is that it will, you never know exactly where it's going to go. The only thing you know about each story is that money's going to change hands. And I don't know if you've ever gotten, the $20 bills or the dollar bills, and it's got a little website on there where you can go to check where that bill has been, where it's going, and that's kind of the idea behind it.
Uh-huh.
What would happen to this bundle of money if a bunch of morons got hold of it and couldn't hang on to it? So that's basically where it comes from and where it goes. And it's hard to talk about the stories without really giving away too much, but I can give you that much.
Okay, well, that sounds great. So it sounds like this is really, it's about the money. And what I'm hearing is that as the money travels from people to people, stuff, I would call it just stuff, happens. And this is part of what the story is. Now, it's humorous. And obviously. And so tell me why it's so humorous.
Well, it's, to me, it's the characters. I come from the camp that I believe in characters over plot. What I love to do is create these outrageous characters, stick them down into the middle of a situation, and let them fight their way out of it. And that's basically what I've done with probably every story here, was I created these characters that some of them, most of them are kind of a blue-collar type character. They are not necessarily down on their luck, but they're always looking for that quick buck. They're looking to make something happen without having to work for it. And they've got this thing about never getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the funniest movies out there and the funniest books are the ones where the characters have these major flaws. And they get down into the middle of the plot, and hilarity ensues, as they say. And I'll say, I have a tendency to ramble, so I forgot your question.
Okay, you answered it. It's fine.
Okay, good.
Is this where your book goes to? It just goes on and on, and people just laugh and laugh.
In a way, each story does have a plot, and they do have their climaxes and so forth. But in a way, I am very much a Southern writer in that I will tend to ramble in certain places, but I try to hold it in check, not get too far away from what's happening in the action. I believe, Fillmore Leonard once said, I tend to take the things people skip and leave them out. So, I've taken some of these stories and really cut them down from their original versions just because they rambled too much in certain areas. So, but it was all for the humor. It was all for the entertainment.
And that's great. And, you know, we certainly do need some humor in our lives, don't we?
Absolutely.
I so agree. So in most cases, stories, either short stories that you have or novels or, you know, any type of a story, there is some underlying message of some sort. And so what is the message, really, with your collection of the short stories? The underlying message.
I never thought about it before. I was talking about it with my wife the other night, and she was telling me the underlying things about it that I didn't know. I wrote them, and I had no clue. Obviously, with everyone trying to get their hands on the money, you've got an element of greed there. And they are all greedy, let me tell you. There's only one true good character in the book who is pious, and of course she's a little old lady. And the other ones, every other character is looking out for themselves. There's an element like the brothers look out for each other. And some of the really good friends, you know, look out for each other. But there's that element of greed. And with that, she pointed out that there is the underlying theme of trust, that no one really trusts anyone else in the book. They do until this element of money enters the story. And then the personalities change. They become who they really are, I guess you could say. Because I also believe you never really know a person until you put them into a tragic situation. And that comes with characters, too. You have to put them into a situation out of their comfort zone to see what their true personality is. And all of these characters go through that little transformation. They've got that cool layer that they let everybody see. And then when this money presents itself, they become who they are.
You talk about greed, and with the economic crisis that we're supposedly in right now, we hear a lot about greed. And so do your stories parallel or reflect anything that is going on right now during our current recession, our current economic atmosphere, whatever you want to call it? Is there some paralleling?
Not really, or at least not on purpose. I truly, Story number three, which is entitled Sammy's Night Out, was actually my first story I wrote. And then I fell in love with Sammy as a character, and I thought, I'm going to write an entire book of nothing but short stories about Sammy. Uh-huh. And I wrote down all these ideas, and that's as far as I got because it was very boring. And even though I could send him through a bunch of things, there was nothing cohesive to bring that together. So one morning, before I had enough coffee, I got the idea of money. And it's something everyone can identify with. And Sammy now is just one character in a book about the money. And the money became the vehicle, the motif to tie all the stories together. And it's more than money tying the stories together. You've got a lot of recurring characters that don't necessarily just show up from story one to story two because you've got, you know, the premise of the money changing hands somehow. Some of them show up, like I've got one story that's got characters from, I think, three or four other stories making cameo appearances. And what I tried to write was a book that has these kind of layers because I like reading those kind of books and watching those kinds of movies where you watch it or you read it the first time and you totally get it and it was great. And you start thinking about, I wonder if, and you read it again and you see that next layer of things you never caught the first time. And that's really what I set out to do. So there was a lot of re-editing and so forth. But it had nothing to do with anything happening in the news or to anyone right now. It was purely for the entertainment. And it wasn't until I talked with my wife that I realized I had underlying themes.
There always are, yes. So more so towards our listening audience that are listening to this, and I'm wondering how they are going to be able to relate to these short stories. If there's something that you can sort of, you know, tell us that, aside from the fact that, yes, it's, you know, laugh out loud adventure, as Paget put it, give us some other reasons that we should, you know, really kind of take a look at this book.
Well, the characters to me, you know, I'm from the South, from North Carolina. And I grew up outside of a town. I won't say city because it's not a city. But I got a taste of small-town life. But I've been to New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles and so forth, so I know what the big cities are about. And what I've found in how very little I've traveled is that there's still an everyman character. There are still characters. You put them in any setting whatsoever, and everyone can relate to them. Sammy is the biggest redneck you could ever meet, but you love him. He speaks his mind. He's not afraid to tell you what he's thinking. He's not afraid to take charge of a situation if he sees something happening. And it's these underlying personality quirks of the characters that everyone can relate with. So for that reason alone, you've got all these characters, and most of these characters were pretty much derived off actual people I know. One or two of them, if they read this book, they would recognize themselves if they're honest with themselves. You know, and I took some literary license and exaggerated certain things, and I took quirks from this friend and quirks from that friend and added them to this friend to make one character, et cetera. But I will say the grandmother character is exactly my only still living grandmother. Uh-huh. That is her exactly, which is why she's so pious. She might read it.
Are you going to invite her to read it?
No. It's the book does have language that she would not be happy with me about.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. We're speaking today with Ross Cavins, and as you have heard so far, Ross is quite a character, so you can also imagine what his book, Follows the Money, is like.
You know, it's definitely not a book for kids or anyone who is easily offended, because the blue-collar characters in it, and they, well, I try to get their talking just right, their diction and everything. And they are Southern, so there is some, you can tell they're talking Southern.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much my Southern accent's coming through. I tried to get rid of it years back, but I knew when I'm either too tired or I've drank a little, it comes out. And I'm neither now, so I've got no excuse. But, yeah.
So you mentioned that, you know, you live in the South. And so is this sort of a regional book, too? Does it particularly, you know, depict some particular region that perhaps that you live in North Carolina? Or is it just sort of a general Southern?
Well, a lot of the references are North Carolina-related inside the book, and I did that on purpose because I did want it to have a regional type feel, just as, like, with Pat Conroy, he makes a lot of South Carolinian references. Elmore Leonard makes a lot of Detroit references. Carl Hyacin makes a lot of Florida references, and you write what you know, and I've lived a few places, but they've all been in North Carolina, so North Carolina is what I know. And it will have a regional feel, but I tried to make it have a broad appeal so that, you know, for instance, there's a couple colleges mentioned, Duke and North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina teams, you know, biggest rivalry, depending on where you live, whether or not you agree with that, but one of the oldest rivalries in college basketball. And they're mentioned more than once in here because of the way the characters are dealing with things. And, you know, that's regional, but everybody knows who they are. So it's things like that. I tried to keep it to have an appeal for everyone.
You mentioned there's some, I don't know how I should say this, choice language. And
yes.
Also that you feel that sometimes maybe because of this, people will be offended. And so I was just wondering why the importance of this type of language in this book.
For the characters to be true to their characters, and I'm very adamant about keeping the characters true to what I'm trying to, who I'm trying to portray. And I keep going back to Elmore Leonard. He's one of my idols, not really idol, but I love his style. I love how he brings across his characters, and a lot of their personality brings through their actions and their diction and everything they say. The narrative that he will draw does the same sort of thing. So I try and take some of these great authors who are known for bringing their characters across and try to figure out what it is about them and their style that does that. And that's one of the things, like, I'm not even sure my mom has read the book. Because I wonder. I said, you know, this isn't Danielle Steele. You know, so you need to, of course, that may be a bad reference there. So, but it is, I try to, there's a couple adjectives that I try to use to explain it. It's hard-edged, it's gritty, It is raunchy in places, just from the characters and how they react to each other, and humorous. You will laugh. You may be embarrassed that you're laughing, but you're laughing.
And sometimes, you know, and I have to agree with you that the language makes the character. Otherwise, if you eliminate that type of language, which some people may find offended, the character totally changes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't have a redneck character like Sammy. I say redneck because around here, redneck's just part of the language.
Right. It's a southern.
And,
no.
Oh, yeah.
It's southern. I'm in Texas. We have rednecks here, too.
Yeah. But if Sammy said Dagnabbit, you know, that just wouldn't be
no.
Sammy.
That's right.
It wouldn't ring true. Try to write true characters because they are truly based on people I know. So
you mentioned that you're based on characters of people you know. Are you one of the characters in the book?
Okay, I didn't know you were going to come there.
You don't have to tell me which one you are, but...
Oh, yeah, I'm not going there, definitely. Some of the characters do have my traits, my bad habits or good habits. Again, write what you know. And some of them do have, like, hobbies and so forth and thoughts that I've had at times. So, you know, part of the book, when I've taken courses before in writing, professors, very encouraging, said, you've got the humor down pat. You need to expand your characters more. They need to be, in order to be memorable characters, people just can't laugh at them. They've got to actually add some worth to the reader's day. So some of the characters actually get a little deep in places.
Mm-hmm.
Now, deep may be they're full of it, but they're getting there. Some of that comes from me. Some of it is just me letting the characters explore things that, that nobody knows the answers to. Things like religion, government, etc. There are a couple of themes that I carry throughout. Religion is one that plays a part in several of the stories, in small parts and then in big parts. Peanut Butter Crunch is another favorite of mine that found its way in here into several stories.
Mm-hmm.
I can't put down my Peanut Butter Crunch. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm referring to, Captain Crunch?
Yes, Captain Crunch.
Cereal? Okay. I feel better. And you've got other things like that make appearances and show the correlation between some of the characters. Even though they're very different people, they still think about some of the same things.
So,
I'm not sure if I answered your question again.
You did. Ross, I was on your website earlier, and I noticed that you claim that you have an infinite ego. I'm wondering if this character, the infinite ego character, comes out in this particular book, Follow the Money.
There is a character in there like that, but he's not based on me. He is almost entirely based on one person.
But you know.
Including his enormous girth. Yes, oh yes, very much. And this person, I would love for them to read it. But I made the character a little more complex than the actual person, because the actual person is pretty shallow.
Well, you know, as an author, you certainly have that literary license that you use. So I'm going to go into a little serious part of this now.
Cuddle.
You had, yeah, cuddle.
Well, let me get a drink.
Over the phone. You had mentioned greed and trust were sort of the focal points in your book, and so we talked about the greed. Let's just kind of delve a little bit into the trust and bring that to the light.
Okay. I'll take a few examples. We've got, without trying to give too much away about the book, or it's really not about the book. It's a lot of the great things about the book are the way that things are revealed, so I don't want to give too much away. But the first story, you've got two brothers who implicitly trust each other. One is considered the brains of the family, and that's not saying too much, but they do implicitly trust each other. You've got, I want to say a story number five. You've got the story with the golfers. Two of the friends trust each other to a certain point. But they're not even a major trust issue. Let me see what I got here. I need to find, story number four. You've got two best friends. Yeah, I guess they'd be best friends. I never thought about that before. But one is kind of a crackhead. Sort of, he's more of a meth head, I guess you could say. And the other one is kind of running the show, only trusts him when he's not on drugs, because he knows he's not worth anything when he's on drugs. So he's got trust issues with him, and they've got to do a job. And he will not give him a hit until they've done the job, because he knows once they've done the job, he can't trust him to actually do it. So that's part of some trust issues there. The last story, you've got the two main characters are a grandmother and a grandson. And you've got a grandson. Well, I just won't give anything away. It's early Saturday morning, and he's helping his grandmother get groceries. And he would really rather not be there. But it's his grandmother. So he's got to help her, you know, which I'm realizing now as I'm telling you this, that has nothing to do with trust. I just felt the need to tell you about it. But he's a character that he does trust in, and he's got a family trust thing, and he cares about his grandmother so much, and she cares about him from the things that happen later in the story. I'm not really answering this question well.
That's okay, but what I'm getting out of this, though, that there are some underlying messages, and that the readers can actually probably parallel some parts of their own lives with some of these characters, and then be able to either say, whoa, this is really like me, and laugh about it because of the situations, or saying, whoa, I'm glad this isn't me, and laugh about it. You know, that's what I'm getting from what you're saying.
Yeah, one of the stories, and this bleeds over into another story, you've got two cougars, I guess what they call two older ladies, single older ladies, who are on the prowl, basically.
Yep.
And they trust each other to a point, but when they finally get hold of the money, and this happens in the next story, they are just totally devoid of trust outside anyone outside of them two. I mean, they don't trust anyone except themselves. And it's really funny to see their reactions with some of the other characters and how they react to some of the tense situations they're put in. Situations that, I won't give too much away. But
I think that we probably sort of, you know, had enough to entice our listening audience that, hey, this is a really good book with some really neat, interconnected stories that are just good for humor and, you know, sort of vegging out and getting away from reality, although maybe this might be some people's reality, but still something that you can really laugh at. And so, Ross, let's talk about your website, and please tell our listening audience what your website address is.
Easy. It's rosscavins.com.
And excuse me. I'm going to spell it as rosscavins.com, and it basically goes, that's the author name. And I was on your website earlier, and, you know, it's a place that you can kind of go and spend quite a bit of time in there. You've got all kinds of great stuff, so I encourage the listeners to go ahead and check out your website, because there's stuff on there, not only information about your book, but also other things that they can read. Again, Ross, it's been a real pleasure having you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed myself.
And listeners, this is Irene Watson for Inside Scoop Live. Be sure to check out Ross's website. It's rosscavin.com. And definitely check out his book, Follow the Money, a collection of interconnected short stories. And as our reviewer and reader view said, it is a good laugh-out-loud adventure. And I just encourage you, if you need to just take some time out and have a good laugh, get this book, Follow the Money by Ross Cavin. Bye for now.